You all know about the travel ban, if I want to call it that way. And people have, I believe, a little bit misunderstood some of them, who are the very strong Trump supporters as to what we are trying to do when we give a standing watch program or a Aufpostenstehen program. And one person over there in Germany was extremely angry, wrote me a very nasty letter, that I am giving this anti-Trump speech. And of course, he also said some very bad things, frankly. And so I wrote him back and said, well, if you ever write me like that again, your memos are going to end up in my spam file. I won't even read them anymore. And so he wrote me back, apologized. This is not a member, by the way, but it's somebody who has been in contact with me. And so he apologized, but then he said, yeah, but I still want to know, why are you, you know, saying these bad things about Mr. Trump, and you never said anything bad about Mr. Obama? I said, well, you know, if you look at our standing watch programs, that is not quite accurate, but here's the point. We are not in the political field. We are not taking positions when it comes to political candidates, neither pro nor con. What we are pointing out is if something is happening which brings about consequences which are of biblical proportions, then we talk about it. And it's not speaking in terms of I'm supporting this person against that person. And we in the church got to learn that too. We are not here to support anyone insofar as, oh, this person is better than that person, this candidate is better than that person, that's why we need to vote for that particular candidate or against that one. See, that's not the responsibility of the church members. And frankly, many haven't quite understood that yet. I mean, I'm not talking about hopefully our people, but many in the church think they have to vote for somebody, not understanding that God is in control and it's happening the way God wants it. Now, when it comes now to this travel ban, a lot has been said because another order came out last night, and that order by a federal judge put a complete block on the travel ban nationwide. It's temporary, but I'd like to just give you a few excerpts from what happened. And this is taken from the New York Times, but I also have articles from Deutsche Welle. I have articles from other Times of Israel is another one. And they all pretty much agree on what happened. A federal judge in Seattle on Friday temporarily blocked President Trump's week-old immigration order from being enforced nationwide. The White House vowed late Friday to fight what it called an outrageous ruling. But then, in a revised statement, the word outrageous was removed. Now, the New York Times apparently still quoted it as originally it was stated with the word outrageous in it. So Mr. Trump then tweeted and said, oh, see, again, the bad press, because they didn't omit the word outrageous. Well, then last night he kept tweeting, however. And so this is from the Times of Israel. So he tweeted against the federal judge who a day earlier blocked his ban on admitting travelers from seven predominantly Muslim countries. Trump on Twitter called the ruling ridiculous. Outrageous, ridiculous, I'm not sure what the big difference is, and vowed to get it overturned. A few minutes later, Trump added, interesting that certain Middle Eastern countries agree with the ban. I'll talk about that in a moment. And a third tweet complained that the opinion of this so-called judge, which essentially takes law enforcement away from our country, is ridiculous. Now, the problem with all of this is that the so-called judge is a highly accepted one. He was actually appointed by President Bush in 2003. He was confirmed unanimously by the Senate, 99 votes against none. And so he has been on the bench since 2004. He's conservative. But he found that the ban was illegal, as many others have actually voiced their concern. So let me just read to you what happened. Judge Robart temporarily banned the administration from enforcing two parts of Mr. Trump's order, its 90-day suspension of entry into the United States of people from the seven countries, and of course they are listed, and its limits on accepting refugees, including any action that prioritizes the refugees' claims from certain religious minorities. It's interesting in oral argument, and first of all, what I did, as a good lawyer would do, I went to find the original order, which I have right here. It's a TRO, a temporary restraining order, which I will explain in a moment what that means. But the temporary restraining order didn't say an awful lot. The temporary restraining order only kind of set forth the conclusions of the findings, but didn't really explain the cause for the findings. Now, so you had to go to the transcript to find that out. So what happened is the judge apparently didn't like the idea that this was a Muslim ban. He said that's kind of a stretch based on the order. You can't quite say that it is a Muslim ban. On the other hand, he did ask if there had been any terrorist attacks since 9/11 by people from the seven countries listed in Trump's order. And then when the person who represented the White House said she didn't know, then the judge answered saying, no, the answer is none. You are here arguing we have to protect from these individuals, from these countries, and there is no support for that. So that's apparently part of the reasoning why the TRO was granted, that it doesn't match with what actually happened. So consequently and subsequently, the White House informed, at least on a temporary basis, that the airlines should in fact begin to start sending people back to the United States. And the airlines actually have started doing this. And it includes Lufthansa, Swiss Airways, and then some of the Arab airlines, which I don't really know, Egypt Air is one of them, but also British Airways and French Air. So they all have now started to again transport people from these seven Muslim countries to the United States, which, of course, the White House didn't like a bit. So they said, well, we have to obey the order, but we are going to fight it. Now, here it gets complicated. First of all, in the hearing, it was mentioned that, which wasn't known, that 100,000 visas, since the order came, executive order came into effect, 100,000 visas had been revoked. And later, this was downsized to 60,000. But it was admitted that 60,000 were revoked. In other words, what we're talking about is the fact here that you have a valid visa. And they were revoked with a stroke of a pen. No reasoning, except only because you belong to a particular country. So the New York Times is saying, the next question at the trial court level will be whether Judge Robart will make the temporary restraining order more permanently by issuing a preliminary injunction. He ordered the parties to propose a briefing schedule on that question by Monday. And so on Monday, they will exchange their papers. And then the judge, perhaps within the next 2 weeks or so, will decide whether this TRO is going to be permanent. What if he decides it's not going to be permanent? Or, next question, if he decides it's permanent and the White House will appeal to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. And let's say the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals will also say that the ban is unconstitutional, then it will go to the United States Supreme Court, which at this point is 4-4, for conservatives, for liberals, and one vacant position, which now they are battling on whether this position should be filled, and obviously filled by a nominee by President Trump. And so I can foresee that that will be stalled, because I don't think that there are the Senate, specifically the Democrats, are very anxious to get him approved, and then it's going to be a 5-4 situation. So here is the problem, and I have listened to quite a few legal experts on that issue. So now people are being flown in again from overseas, let's say, and while they are in the process, or maybe already here, this TRO is revoked again in one way or another. So what's going to happen? Well, what's going to happen is that people will be again removed from the country, or their entrance will be barred. So that's why several attorneys have said, I still would advise against doing anything at this point, because the situation is far too fluent, let's say. And most certainly the advice is don't leave the country, period. If you belong to any of those nations listed in the executive order, do not leave the country, because you may find yourself prevented from coming back depending on what is going to happen. Now this, of course, has caused all kinds of furor around the world. Originally, people who had green cards were barred. People who had dual citizenship were barred. Dual citizenship meaning somebody had a British passport and, let's say, also a passport from some of these seven countries. Or there were several from Germany falling into the category. So that was all kind of then explained or reversed, but the reversal wasn't all that clear because looking at some embassies, they gave conflicting information as to what would happen. Some embassies said, well, if you have a valid passport of some of these seven countries, no good. But if your passport is no longer valid, then it's good. Others said, well, if you have been in the country for several years, even though your passport might not be valid, still no good. So the confusing picture still was obviously there, still there. And of course, right now it's even, in a sense, more confusing than before. What is the consequence? That's why we are bringing this out. The consequence is that the world, as we say in our Standing Watch program, is very upset with America, with Mr. Trump. And so this morning, I pulled a few more articles. Now, of course, in the Standing Watch, I talked about this a lot, and our update talks about quite a few articles about the reactions. That's what we need to look at, the reaction. Because why? We know from the Bible, don't we, that the United States of Europe, under 10 nations or groups of nations, will attack the United States of America. That's clearly prophesied. Now, we don't know the timing. We don't know exactly as to when this is going to occur. And we may not even know exactly as to how it's going to occur and why it's going to occur. And in the past, we have thought about all kinds of things. I've heard even some most ridiculous ideas. Somebody was trying to tell me, oh, well, the Germans and the Europeans, they will be so upset with the pornography in the United States. That's why they're going to attack the United States. And I asked this person, have you been in Germany recently? So that's most certainly not the reason. But, you know, this one, what we are seeing right now, that could very well be a reason. Notice Der Spiegel, one of the leading magazines over there in Germany, has published a newest version, which is very offensive, actually. But I want to show you still how they did it. And I don't know whether you can see this. It shows, obviously, Mr. Trump with a sword in his hand cutting off the head of the Statue of Liberty. And even some Germans have said, now that goes too far. But it reflects, unfortunately, a development over there which is in complete opposition to, antagonistic opposition to, not just Mr. Trump, but the United States of America. Let me read to you from an article by The Local, dated February 3. It says, a new poll shows that German trust in the transatlantic relationship has dropped to a level equal to public trust in Russia since Donald Trump was elected U.S. president. In total, 7 out of 10 respondents told a research group that the U.S. is not a trusted ally of Germany at the moment. That was a drop of 37% compared to a survey conducted in November, marking a record history low for faith in the transatlantic partnership, Die Welt reports. Asked about the attitudes to U.S. President Donald Trump, Germany expressed considerable disapproval. Now, let me just say, the majority of Americans at this point also show disapproval. In our update, we talk about 51%, but now it's 53% according to the polls. But 53% approval means pretty much disapproval means 47% approval. Maybe not quite, some people have no opinion, but that's still a sizable number, 47 or maybe 40 whatever percent approval. Anyhow, in Germany it looks much worse. 80% of respondents said that the EU must work more closely to oppose the US president. Similarly, 67% expressed fear that he would harm the German economy, while only 26% said they thought it was a good thing that Trump was implementing his election pledges. Another poll found similar concerns about the new head of the White House among the German public. Only 3% of respondents said they thought German-American relations would improve with Trump in power, while three-quarters of respondents said that they would get worse. Two-thirds of Germans also said that Trump's implementation of election pledges through executive orders is undemocratic. 8 out of 10 said the travel ban for people from 7 Muslim-majority countries was damaging for the United States, and 85% said that Trump's policies would do his country economic damage. And that is exactly what those who have been fighting it in court have been saying. Because now their employers couldn't come back, or couldn't leave, or whatever, couldn't do their business. Many universities couldn't get their students back because they were on break. And so, yes, one of the arguments is, and that is why standing to the states was approved by the court, it's an economic damage which these executive orders implement. Now, another argument which we shouldn't forget, and that is something which has been emphasized time and again in Germany and Europe, is the fact that those 7 countries which were under this ban were countries in which Mr. Trump has no economic interest. That many of the countries which many feel should have been within this ban, if there should be a ban like that, like Saudi Arabia, like Egypt, are countries where Mr. Trump has a great economic interest. And so whether the judge now looked into that, we don't know. But we do know that he said, well, none of those countries have in any way caused any terrorist attack in America. Not one terrorist attack we know of was done by a person coming from these countries. See, Saudi Arabia, it's a different story. Now, even though one spokesman for Mr. Trump came up with a phony concept and absolutely a bogus idea that there was some kind of a massacre someplace and 2 Iraqis were behind it, I mean, that is totally debunked. There's nothing which ever happened like that. So now, where do we go from here? So as I've already told you, Europeans are quite upset, Germans are quite upset, and they realize, specifically because of the Brexit, that they have to get together. They have to get together in order to not getting destroyed and more people will be leaving Europe. And so there has always been this concept that it's going to be a Europe of 2 speeds, that there will be a core Europe on the one hand, and then the rest of Europe, you know, will be under this core Europe. And we can say, with different words, it's going to be a core Europe of EU member states which have adopted the euro. And whether it's 10 direct nations or groups of nations, we don't know, because when I say groups of nations, the Bible might look at Germany and Austria as one. And so, for instance, and even Austria and Hungary could be one if you look back at the Hungarian-Austrian Empire. So we'll have to see how this works out. But the point is, again, people have been talking a lot about a core Europe. And here's an article by The Local dated February 4. German Chancellor Angela Merkel said, European leaders may commit to a union of different speeds when they make a major declaration on its future at a summit in Rome next month. You see, it's always Rome because that's where it all started. The Treaty of Rome, that's how the EU, in a sense, came into being. That's why we have said dogmatically that Italy is not going to leave the EU. It's impossible. See, the latest and last revival of the ancient Roman Empire, and it has to be revived 10 times, is what we are seeing right now. And Italy has to be part of it. There's no question about it. But you see, again, in Rome, they get together next month at a summit. It says the European Union has long been riven by debate about whether all countries must commit to full integration, including the single currency, or whether some can go at different paces. The 27 leaders, minus Britain, are due to make a declaration. The Britain is no longer a part of this, even though they have not officially yet declared the Brexit, but they are out. So the 27 leaders, minus Britain, are due to make a declaration at the summit in Rome in March, marking the, 60th anniversary of the EU. So the EU has been in operation for 60 years, long time. Six is the number of men, if you please, in which they will set out a post-Brexit roadmap. We certainly learn from the history of the last years that there will be as well a European Union with different speeds, that not all will participate every time in all steps of integration, Merkel told reporters after a summit in Malta. I think this may be in the Rome Declaration as well. Merkel said the idea was to set out a plan for the next 10 years of the EU, which has been buffeted by the Eurozone crisis, Brexit, migration, the Ukraine conflict, and now, surprise, faces a new challenge in the form of US President Donald Trump. Belgium, the Netherlands, and Luxembourg, a group of the EU's founding members, also issued a statement on Friday backing a two-speed EU. So, can we see how this all is developing? Or can we not see that? I mean, some people can't see it, even in the church. I know of people who at one time understood that it's going to be a United States of Europe under a leadership of, let's say, 10 nations or groups of nations, under, again, the leadership of a charismatic political leader or Führer, a military political Führer, who's going to work in hand in hand with a religious Führer. They once understood that. Now they're teaching something totally different in the church. How can that be? How can it be that people who once understood the truth now suddenly don't understand it anymore and teach something completely different? The woman riding the beast, Revelation 17. We've always understood that that refers to the seven last resurrections of the Holy Roman Empire. In other words, a collaboration between church and state. And the seven last resurrections of the ancient Roman Empire is this collaboration. We understood that. We understood who the woman riding the beast was. A fallen woman. Babylon, the mother of harlots, it says. The mother of daughter churches who also fell away from the truth. Now suddenly people say, no, it's America riding Europe in the church. Or even some may say it's Islam for whatever reason. Now it's Islam. Because the woman has a cup of oil in her hand, so it's got to be Islam, got to be the Quran. I mean, nonsense. But this is what's being circulated in certain corners. And we just got to be aware of that. We have to make sure that we are not being fooled by these kind of deceptive concepts. And we need to watch what is happening right now in Europe, in America. These things are of tremendous importance in light of the fact that the relationship between Europe and the United States has never been worse. Never been worse since World War II, the end of World War II. And of course, again, you might have your position, your understanding, your idea as to whether this ban was justified or not. The point is, I look at the reaction in the world, because this is what's bringing about biblical prophecy. And the reactions show that this ban, more than any other executive order so far, has caused tremendous upheaval and a tremendous condemnation around the world.